Hello? Anybody out there? Just me? I know you're all out there. Way out there. I'm so glad to get to know a lot of you guys, and I hope you'll come back to this retreat center again and again, because I intend to. I made a mistake the last couple of years. I've been booking things in the when this retreat was coming around, and believe me, I need to see you. I need to be with you, because to you, I'm just another one of you, and it's very important for me to know that, I don't walk on water. I'm just a plain, ordinary guy. So I wanted to clarify something, because Arab came to me and had tears in his eyes when he... I want to make sure that this second step is understood. And how it was told to me, Clint said to me, he said, the strangest thing, because when I found that the great reality was deep inside me, and that in the last analysis it would only be there, he said to me, the eyes that looked through the eyes of Moses are looking through your eyes. Wham! That one kind of like threw me back against the wall. It was very hard for me to understand that. But I get it today. I understand that. That which is within me, is part of me. And it's looking out through me to you and connecting to you, and you're connecting to me. It's really important. I wanted to read you a couple of little things about that. This is kind of like a little poem, and it says, the man whispered, God speak to me, and a meadow lark sang, but the man did not hear. So the man yelled, God speak to me, and the thunder rolled across the sky, but the guy didn't listen. The man looked around and said, God, let me see you. And a star shined brightly, but the man did not notice. And the man shouted, God, show me a miracle, and the life was born. But the man did not know. So the man cried out in despair, touch me, God, and let me know you're here. Whereupon God reached down and touched the man. But the man brushed the butterfly away and walked on. It says, don't miss out on a blessing because it isn't packaged as you expect. If you ask for anything in the morning, ask that your eyes be opened, that your heart be opened, that you be opened up to experience what life is bringing you today. It will bring it to you on a platter. How about that? You get to make the decision. You get to do whatever you want to do. And you get to see it however you want to see it, I love this too. It says, Abe was fiercely independent, even at the age 85, but after a mild stroke, his son insisted that he move in with him. Abe missed going to the park near his old apartment, and one Saturday he set out to find it. When he became disoriented, he asked a young boy where the park was. The boy named Timmy said he'd like to take Abe there, but he didn't have time because he was looking for God. He needed to talk to him about why his parents were getting a divorce. Maybe God's in the park, said the old man. I'd like to talk to him, too, about why he's made me useless. They set off together to find God. At the park, Timmy began to cry about the divorce. Abe lovingly held the boy's face in his hands and looked him straight in the eyes and said, Timmy, I don't know why bad things happen, but I know it's not because of you. I know you're a good boy and your parents love you and you'll be okay. Are you sure? I'm sure. Timmy gave Abe a big hug and said, I'm so glad I met you. Thanks. I think I can go now. From across the street, Timmy's mother saw them hug, and when the boy came up, she asked in a worried voice, who was that old man? I think he's God. Did he say that? She demanded. No. But when he told me I was going to be okay, I felt better, and only God can do that. When Abe got home, his son said in a scolding voice, where were you? I was in the park with God. What makes you think you were with God? Because he sent me a boy who needed me. When the boy hugged me, I felt God telling me I wasn't useless. And that's what we're here for. We're here for each other. Because you can, if you're in this all by yourself, you're in such a big ball of trouble and a big mess. You know, we all have so much experience. And if we don't have any, we're willing to listen. Why? Because they were willing to listen to us. And I'm going to read you something else, too, because I just friggin' love it. And because it's so explicit. It says, "The fields were parched and brown. The crops lay wilting from thirst. Local ministers called for an hour of prayer on the town square, asking everyone to bring an object of faith or inspiration. The townspeople filled the square with anxious faces and hopeless hearts. A variety of objects clutched in prayerful hands, holy books, crosses, rosaries. When the hour ended, as if on command, a soft rain began to fall. Cheers swept the crowd as they held their treasured objects high in gratitude and praise. One faith symbol seemed to overshadow all the others. A 9-year-old child had brought an umbrella because she knew it was going to rain. You know, and that's why I tell you, you know, God is not deaf. You only have to tell him once. You don't have to keep repeating him and begging him and doing all this kind of stuff. Once is enough. You know, this is your father you're talking about. The one that loves you. The guy who's brought the picture of the prodigal child, the prodigal son up to me, Rembrandt's painting, you know. It's that father that loves us. It's the father that Bill Wilson talks about, his newfound friend. And that's what's going on here with you and me. I'm not talking in goody-goody stuff here. I'm talking in pragmatic stuff, stuff that really works, that works in rough going. It's an amazing, amazing process going on here. You can't afford to miss any of it. It's just too fabulous. And I told you I'm the crybaby. I have to blow my nose. Oh, God. Here's a... Never can find anything. It's because I have so much crap in that bag. So, I'll tell you what I believe Nelson Mandela knew and what so many people down through the ages have known who have been able to access this power. Whatever you conceive it to be. Like it was said in meditation this morning, choose your own. That was such a liberating thought to me when I was able to choose my own. You know, I remember so distinctly when that happened to me. I drove out of my garage one morning when I lived in the marina on One Iron Sights, right on the Strand there, you know. And this guy, our mailman, who is a red-headed, freckle-faced dude, had this big turban on, you know. And I'm thinking, look at him, you know, who does he think he is, and blah, blah, blah. Because he didn't look like what he was professing to be, you know. And then I went around the corner, and I saw these three guys come around with these hats with the wide brims, you know, and these curls at their, you know, and their skirts, the wind was kind of like blowing them up a little bit. And that's when it hit me. Luther, they're able to believe in whatever they want to believe in. Everyone, this is the joy in life, being able to believe in whatever you believe in. I believe it should be a good force. I don't think it should be a force for evil. I think it should be a force that will help your brother along on his way and certainly help you along on your way. You know, so anyway, Nelson, I think many, many people have known this, that there is a place in you that is always calm and clear. It is possible to be utterly calm, beautifully sane in the midst of the worst kind of inner or outer trouble, but it doesn't happen very often, even among pretty well-balanced people. There's a lost secret here and a lost art, and you don't have to be a genius to rediscover it, okay? Now, what we're talking about here is accessing this power. Like when you're in trouble, when it's hopeless or whatever, we have to go within. I tell these guys I sponsor all the time, you have to go within for a moment, even if it's only for a second. You know, I was in the hair business when I first got sober. And I was so crazy. Oh, my God. I mean, I have so many stories about crazy and hairdressing. You can't believe it. And I saw these two guys come in the front door. You know, we all know a cop when we see him. I don't care how they dress, okay? He had on wingtip shoes and a plaid suit and all that. And I thought, these are cops and they're coming looking for me, you know? So I leaped up. I was about 3 months sober. Ran back in the bathroom, locked the door, got up really close to the mirror, you know, and I looked in there and it says, your name is Luther Wood. You're an alcoholic. Your primary purpose is to stay sober and carry the message that it works. You know, it's like a clearing board. I went within for 1 second. You know, I come back out. Of course, they were looking for me, but they weren't looking for me for what I thought they were looking for me for. There had been a murder in the parking lot up there at the Dime Store, and they was wanting to know if I saw anybody suspicious hanging around the parking lot and so on and so forth. You know, it was so funny. God, I just thought of something so funny when I was. I was in the nut house in Camarillo State Hospital I think I told you that story last night, didn't I, when I escaped into the hospital and they took me in. I have no place to go now because they've made a university out of Camarillo State Hospital, so I have nowhere to go. And but here I am, the nut, mind you. By the way, I saw the best rendition of Fiddler on the Roof I think I have ever seen in the Nut House. They had some guy parked on the edge of the stage, some younger guy there with his legs crossed, swinging his leg the entire 3 hours of that show. It was like totally amazing. And so anyway, here I am, the nut, and they put me in the barbershop. And they gave me, mind you, a pair of 17-inch Filipino shears. I mean, these are hedge clippers, you know. That's all they had, and that's what I used. And I'm the crazy one, right? And they give me... I made more damn money in the nut house, and I only charged $1 a haircut, $1 for a hairdo, whatever. And I always had money jingling in my pocket. And I know that thing about me today, you know. I don't care what happens in my life, as long as I have a pair of scissors and I can cut your hair or whatever out on the street corner and make a few bucks. I did that when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. People trusted me enough, as shaky as I was. And it took me 45 minutes to cut your hair because I sweated and shook and all of that. It was terrible, you know. So I was so bad that I learned to wedge this, you know, make a wedge out of my arm so that I could hold the razor and not cut your throat. You know, I learned how to do those things since I was really shaky for a long time. But anyway, and then the nut house there, there was this really tough guy. He was a little Hispanic guy. They call him Cholos today, I think. He was tough. I mean, he just looked right through you. You know what? It was like smoldering eyes, you know, dare you to say a word. And he had this hair that's shiny, black, beautiful hair. Comb back and a ducktail, you know. You guys don't even know what that is, but it could be a DA, you know. They comb it all together and then part it down the middle. It was a duck's butt. And it was long and glamorous, right? And I had dazzled people with my footwork in those days. I would cut hair and I'd cut and then thin and cut and thin. They do that now. I did that years ago, right? I used to tell people, don't come to me unless you want to be a little bit ahead of the time. Because you might be alarmed if I cut all your sideburns off up to here and, you know, do all that. So anyway, I was cutting his hair. He's sitting in my chair, and I'm cutting his hair and thinning, cutting and thinning. And then I pull this big chunk of hair up back here, right in the back. And I pulled it up, and I thought I had my thinning shears in my hand. And I whacked that sucker off with those, and my heart stopped. That hair went, it was that Hispanic hair, you know, that's really kind of like stiff. And my heart stopped, and I said, oh my God, you know. And he couldn't see it. He's looking in the mirror, and I'm trying to comb over it, and it's sticking out through here, you know. And then I started to laugh. I laughed so goddamn hard, I didn't think I'd be able to finish the haircut. I'm in the floor just about. And what I was laughing about is, this guy is so mean. He is so nasty. There's nobody here that's going to say your hair looks funny. You know? And they didn't, as far as I know. He never approached me ever again, you know, after that. But that's some of the antics we get in. That's just amazing, amazing, amazing. So, just wanted to be very, very clear. Now, you can tell me that you don't have this power within you, and I'll tell you you're it's bull. You are suffering under the illusion of a lie. This is a lie. You know, these were some of my greatest fears when I was working the steps with Clint. When I was doing a fourth step for our fifth step with him, by the way, you know, about three quarters of the way through the fifth step, he said, "What is the matter with you?" And I started to cry, and I said, "I'm afraid." And he said, "What are you afraid about?" And I said, "This is the kind of God I came here with, the Alcoholics Anonymous, the stingy, penurious, punishing God." You know, I said, "This is going to be my punishment. I know who I am. Okay." I know where I've been. I know the things I've done. I know all of the lines that I crossed and stepped across throughout all the years. I know exactly who I have never forgotten who I am. I do not take my sobriety for granted. This is a friggin' miracle here. And if I want to keep this, I have to stay in here. I've got to stay on the firing line of life with you guys out there in the trenches. Not sitting in the house, you know, and pull the shades. I can't be doing any of that kind of stuff. So anyway, the kind of penurious God I got here with us is that Clint, here's going to be my punishment. And this was especially in the West LA men's retreat that, you know, with Hamid and all those people, they were all in the meeting when I was growing up. And I spilled my guts every Thursday night. It was just like a steady stream of everything that I was going through. In fact, Hamid just said to me one night, he said, "You tell it all, don't you?" And I said, "Yeah, I have nothing to hold back. I have no secrets from you. I will answer any questions anybody asks me on any subject at any time. I have no secrets anymore." This is a liberating thought, you know. I have nothing binding me. I have no secrets. So anyway, I said, "My punishment is going to be this. I can see it in Mike. I can see it in Rick. I saw it. I saw it happen to Ray Malogian." Changed his name, but I still know his name, Malogian. Ray Samalogian. So anyway, where was I going with all that? Right. So he, I said, "This is going to be my punishment, that I'll be able to see it in all of you people, but I'll never be able to achieve it. I won't, God won't give it to me. He gave it to you, but he won't give it to me. That's the God I came here with, and this is bullshit. I had to come, you know." He went and got a piece of paper out of his desk drawer, and I'm not going to go into the nuts and bolts of the paper, but what it said essentially was, "Do I know that the fear is a lie?" See, and I had to. He made me come to terms with that right then and there. Did I know that the fear was a lie? After I swallowed that one, I said, "Okay, I believe that. The fear is a lie, because I don't think there can be any God that stingy out there and that punishing out there, you know." And he said, "Okay." He said, "Do you believe that God can remove the fear?" And I said, "Yes." I was afraid he wouldn't, but I said, "Yes." And he and I worked on that until I was completely liberated from that fear. So if you're in this room and you think that you're never going to have a power greater than yourself, that you're never going to have a companion that you can go through life with, I'm not talking again about psychotic behavior. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the truth. I had to know the truth when I got here. I wasn't going to accept anything else. It's not good. Anything else is not good enough for you and me. We are God's people. We are his greatest achievement of all that he made. If you just think about the body that we're living in here, I mean, it's totally amazing. It even heals itself, takes care of itself, takes a cut and, you know, fixes itself. And it's waterproof. It's, it's the most amazing thing, you know, just this body and everything else. If you start looking into life like he was talking about in meditation this morning, get out in the garden, look at the flowers. Look at that color. Look at the bugs living in there with it. You know, look at everything along the way. All of life is a meditation of a sort. It's exactly what the theme was in meditation this morning, that all of life is a form of meditation. And you say you can't meditate, you can't. Yes, you can. You just need to get out and experience the world. And alcoholics, I especially love because we are the dreamers. You know, but you have to have the courage to get out there, to screw up, to make a mistake, to whatever, to experience life. You have to do it. Otherwise, you'll miss it. And you can't afford to miss it. If you're like me, you can't afford to miss this thing. And life is very generous. It will come and bring it to you over and over and over, again and again and again. And again and again and again, we say, no. Life is not what I wanted. Haven't you something else? My advice would be take it. Take it and run with it. And fill yourself up with it. Fill yourself completely and totally up with it. I love this here. I love what we do. I'll tell you a story about a guy I sponsored, Jimmy. He's deaf. I went to school and I learned sign language so that I could talk to him. This is one of the loneliest people on the planet. He comes to the meeting. Everyone says, "Hi, Jimmy, how are you?" And that's it. There's no more talk. There's no more conversation. No nothing, you know. So I go to North Hollywood High School, and I learn sign language, you know. This is a book, and you take it out of here and put it here. That's how I learn, you know. So anyway, he and I are talking one night, and we were at the Pacific Group, and we were in Maria's kitchen around the corner there, and we were talking, and then all of a sudden he leaps up, he says, "I gotta go, I have a commitment, I have to go, blah, 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 blah." So I said, wait, I'm not through yet. And later on he told me, he says, "Luther, your sign language is really good," he said, "but when the spirit takes over, you know." That's what happens if you give yourself up to this stuff, you know. I went back to the College of the Desert, where I live over here. I decided to major in Spanish at 75 years old. The kids treated me like, they were so wonderful to me, I couldn't stand it. I sat up in the front, I asked all the dumb questions. I got a 4.0 average, you know, in school, and I'm getting offers from Harvard and all kinds of places, you know, to come to school there. They obviously haven't looked at my profile to see how old I am. You know, that said. Anyway, I'm watching Jimmy, and he's listening to me. And then I say, if this ever happens to you, I have to tell you, you are dead, okay? I'm looking him straight in the face, full in the face, watching him in his eyes, and I saw that light go on. And all of a sudden, he said, "I understand you." And I said, "I know that. I saw that. I saw that light come on." And once that light comes on, see, it can never be extinguished. I love what St. Francis said. All the darkness in the world cannot extinguish the light of one candle. And that's you and me. All the darkness in the world cannot extinguish the light of one candle. If you'll step out there and speak your truth, what you know to be true, or even what you hope to be true, because like I told you earlier, I believe that we are the dreamers. We are the ones. We will get out there. We are the ones who walk out in the night and look at the constellation Orion and will wind up falling down our knees in the grass saying, "Oh my God, this is too beautiful. Who made all this?" Something that has a particular personal relationship with you and me. As odd as it may seem, as impossible as it may seem, this thing is molecular and it's woven into you and it's woven into me. You know, when we're together, I feel it. I feel it in spades when we're together. So, let's see how we're doing here. I think we could probably leap over into the... did we do the third step or no? We didn't do it yet? So it was so important for me to understand that step, to understand that once I did this, it cannot be reversed. If I understood this, I tell guys this, understand what we're doing here, because God, as I said earlier, is not capricious. You can't have it back tomorrow. You may think you do, but it's an effort and futility. You know, you cannot have it back. So it's a very serious thing that we're undergoing here, and I'm here to tell you, you don't have to do it. If you don't do it, I'm still going to be your sponsor. We're still going to do whatever all these things are that we want to do. But if you do this, it's all over. Your life is none of your business from then on. You have to learn how to work in concert with this power. And, truthfully speaking, it's how you and I were made. It's how you and I were designed. With this power that resides within us, we have to learn how to work in concert with that power. When you hear that, we know that voice. Okay. We know our voice, and we also know that voice. And it's when I override that I get in trouble. And then I'm in big trouble, you know, and I pay for it too. And again, like I say, it's not that I become a robot or something takes over my life and it's completely in charge and blah, 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 blah. That's not what happens to me. I am very much like Nelson Mandela. I am the captain of my soul. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. Knowing this much, to answer your question, Reb, wherever I go, he goes with me. It has to travel with me. It's portable. I can't get rid of it. There's no way I can go out that door without it. I know that. But what they teach us here in Alcoholics Anonymous is that we make contact with that power, a conscious contact with that power. Now, I ask that power, you know, to go with me, to put the words in my mouth, to help me, because I'm only human, and I'm frail, and I'm small. I'm little compared to, and yet I'm great. You know, both ends of the spectrum. So anyway, once I understood that step, I told Clint, I said, okay, I understand this fully. And I met him in his office. And I love him so much. He always prayed with me, and he would get down on his knees with me. I'm not much of a knee getter on her today, okay? I don't believe that I have to do that so much because wherever I am, this power is. If I'm upright, laying down, or whatever, wherever I am, this power is, you know? I don't know, see if you can handle this idea. The ground you're walking on is holy ground. Do you understand what I'm saying there? That power which is within us is divine. It is a divine power. So wherever I am, I take that with me. And I'm a little more careful where I take it today, too. You know, some of the places that I've been, I had quite an amends letter to God when it was all over and said and done. And I didn't even have one to him in the beginning. But toward the end of working these steps, I realized, wait a minute here. I really owe God a tremendous amends here. And I wrote that sucker out, and I was coming home from the Pacific Group one Wednesday night, coming down the Ocean Avenue, you know, on my way to the marina, and I thought, where am I going to read this? Where am I going to do this? And I got to Washington there, and I saw that little synagogue, kitty corner over there, and I parked my car in front, and I went up the stairs, and I got behind a bush underneath a lamp, and pulled out this letter and read my letter to God, my amends letter to him, and did that. Like I said earlier, I did these steps as if my life depended on it, which I think it does. And I hope you'll find the depth of some of the things. Now, I'm not trying to sound good, or wonderful, or I've got so much, and blah, blah, blah. I don't mean that. This happens to every single individual that comes along. We get changed. Our realization changes. Our understanding changes. It keeps evolving. It keeps moving on. Yesterday is gone. You know, what did they say in the Rubaiyat, right? I take the cash and let the credit go, nor heed the rumble of a distant drum. You know, that means today is cash, yesterday is a canceled note, tomorrow's a promissory note. You know, today is cash, is what they're saying. So this is what's going on. And frankly speaking, I believe anyway that God is only right here, right there, right in there. He's only in the now, right in the moment. Period. My memories and everything take me back there, and my dreams and stuff take me over there. But God is here right now, and here with you, with me, you know, with us, filling this room up. So anyway, you know, Clint got down on his knees with me, and we said this prayer, and I had quite an experience at the end of it. And I've seen other people have quite an experience at the end of it. I was just thinking of Michael Fuller. I don't know if any of you guys remember him. You know, he died, I think, brain cancer. And but he had an experience in my living room that was amazing to see the change come over him. It was like the change that was in Jimmy when I saw that light go on. You know, I knew that Jimmy knew what I knew at that particular point. Jimmy, by the way, totally stone deaf, like I was talking about earlier. Jimmy and I were walking out of the Pacific Group one night, going down the boulevard, and he's talking to me, and he did something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was so clever, I couldn't stand it. I said, "Jimmy, how did you know to do that? That's amazing." And he said, "My voice told me." And I said, "What?" And he's stone deaf. I said, "Your voice told you?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "You have a voice?" He said, "Yeah." So that's what even happened in the deaf world, you know, to somebody that's never heard a sound. Pat and I took him down to Cirque du Soleil when it was in Santa Monica years ago. He had a front row seat so that he could put his hands up on the stage and feel the vibrations and all of that. You know, that's as close that he could come to hearing, you know. So, but when he had that experience, there was a tremendous change in him. Now, I want to give you a warning, too. Don't shut this light out. Don't shut it off. Don't do that. Keep doing the things. Keep going to meetings. Keep talking to people. Keep working the steps with people. Keep passing this thing on. It's always been done this way. You know, Rumi said, "If you do not find me, it's because you do not know that I am here since the beginning of me." You know, you have to keep at it here and keep evolving and keep moving along. And the only way that I knew that, know to do that, is in a very simple way. Just keep staying, going to meetings. I go to 5 a week. Go to as many as you can, work with a lot of people, and keep passing this thing on, because it's something that we have to do. So anyway, I got to a place here. Step 4, by the way, the principle involved there is courage, because it took a whole lot of courage for me to look at me. Keep looking at the clock. We're going to eat pretty soon. So let's see, 4, 5, 6... 7. I want to leave tomorrow for 10, 11, and 12. So, and we got time this afternoon. So we'll cover fourth step this afternoon after lunch. How's about that? Is that good with you? We're doing okay so far? Is it registering? Making any sense? By the way, this retreat is for you. It's not for me. I'm not impressed a bit with me. You know, I am impressed with you. I'm impressed with you, the love that you possess, that will drag anybody from back from the abyss of wherever in the hell they are, you know. And I see that in action around here. So this time is for you, and it's for you to be together and for you to fully experience what's going on here. So anyway, so we'll see you after lunch, and we'll launch into that.